Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Health Blast Radio. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher of Alternative Medicine and Wellness Radio. It is going to be a great year, 2015. We are going to have several of our guests who are inspirational, telling their stories, sharing a lot of their tips about how to live a holistic life and love it. We all have all kinds of challenges these days, and we say we'll try things. We don't get the greatest results, or sometimes it's just mediocre. But we're going to learn to love a holistic life. Isn't that great? We're going to learn that it's great to get up in the morning. It's fabulous if it rains. And it's absolutely incredible that we have these challenges and all of the things we can learn from that. And isn't life just a roller coaster? So thank you so much for joining us. Please check us out on Health Blast Radio on Facebook and also Health Blast 2015 on Twitter. Also, our website, drjeanettegallagher.com, for more information. We also have a women over the age of 50 group starting February 1st, which will be sharing a lot of information about how to help us and ourselves. As we are women, we are also caregivers. We are also part of this world that will be bringing more compassion and empathy towards others. Please do join, and please do check it out on our website, Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. And now, back to the show. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the show, Alternative Medicine and Wellness. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today on Sedona Talk Radio Live, Block Talk Radio, and also we are archived on iTunes. So please do check out all of our shows on all of those venues and post a comment, listen to a few other shows, and just never know what you'll find there. There's so many very different topics and authors and companies and products, a lot of things about health and wellness. So today we are in the middle of the month of January, and we will be talking about health for 30 days. Isn't that absolutely grand? All of these other topics and all of these experiences are all going to be shared what we need to hear. You know, it's not all about the fluff. It's not all about the grandeur. It's not all about the, you know, hey, I'm on top of the world and I got to, you know, yell down so everybody can hear me. We're going to be talking about the softer side today. And the softer side is about what's coming inside your heart and your soul and your spirit and how illness and disease will affect you. Today we're talking about breast cancer. Can it be any more close to your soul? You know, this is something that we really need to talk about. And so many people are going through it. But, you know, what I found in probably, I would say, the last 10 years is that it's gotten to be such a commonplace that people don't even give emphasis to the struggles that everyone is going through. And I really don't want us to ever lose that it's very important for each person, that everyone's struggle is so individual, and they are similar, but they're not the same. So many times, you know, if you look back on history in the 70s and 80s, breast cancer wasn't around very much, and when people got it, it was like, oh my gosh, you would have thought the world had ended because, you know, it happened. There weren't treatments that were going to help them, and that really wasn't a great place to be. But then as we got more treatments, there was different things going on in history, too. So now we look at it, and like I said, you know, I was in the grocery store the other day, and two women were standing there, and they were saying, oh, I got my port yesterday, and the other one said, well, I've been having mine for 6 months. So is that conversation so very common that we can just talk about it in the grocery store? Is this something so common that how many people in the grocery store are actually going through this? We don't even know. But it's about paying attention. Everybody has a struggle. It doesn't matter what it is or how they're going through it. We have to realize and touch each person and believe that their struggles are theirs, but we're always here to help them and support them. Because you just never know. Next day it'll be you, next day it'll be your friend, next day it'll be your other family members. No one is immune from the struggles in life, and it's really all about how we have to go through these, and we will come out on the other side, you know, and what we can learn from that. While we don't want to struggle to have to learn something, it is the process. So today, my guest is Pat Benson. Her book is The Language of Healing, Daily Comfort for Women Living with Breast Cancer. And it's very important. This is a wonderful book. It's very concise. It's very short. It each page, you can open up the book to any page and say, that's what I needed to hear today. Anybody could read this, a caregiver, a spouse, family member, another relative, almost even your older children could read through this to understand maybe what these people are going through and what Pat has gone through, and also her co-author, Linda Dackman. So it's very important that these people do speak out, that I speak out, that you speak out, that Pat speaks out. Because if we don't know and we don't have an idea of what they're going through, what they're trying to say, how can we be there? So someone needs to say something, because we can't all, you know, just assume, because then we'll always be, or most of the time, we're on the wrong side of assumption. So it's wonderful that Pat put on every single page deep thoughts, deep quotes, and a whole lot of stuff that we could reference to be able to feel how maybe she might be feeling or others may be. Pat, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
And your thoughts on the opening talk?
Well, you know, what really struck me, I have to say, when you talk about the past, breast cancer, what it was like for our mothers, our grandmothers. In fact, when I was diagnosed with breast cancer, my mother had just passed away a year before, and my father was still in mourning for that. But when I told him the news, he just burst into tears. And this was a man from the, you know, the greatest generation who really didn't show a lot of emotion, but I knew he thought it was a death sentence. And he said, I just can't lose you. I can't lose you before me. I just want to die.
Yeah.
And it struck me very powerfully, his perception of what a breast cancer diagnosis meant. And I realized in my own lifetime, our lifetime, how far we've come.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, breast cancer has come out of the closet, as you say, as you referenced the grocery store conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But there's both, I think, an upside and a downside to that.
Right.
I think the great news about women coming together in various organizations and fundraisers and bringing breast cancer out of the closet, but in some ways it's also been so commercialized that
mm-hmm.
when I went through this experience, and, of course, in my book, as you mentioned, I share the stories and the insights of many diverse women who are going through this experience. And there was this certain pressure that you just have to, in our culture, you know, get on with it, get over it, just do it.
Right.
And yet it is, we share, there's some universal challenges, but it is a very individual journey. And that's something I appreciate that you stress that. And it isn't just about the body. It impacts our very identity, our spirit, our whole perception of ourselves. It impacts our relationships. And so each woman is going to find a different way to make it through the shock, the grief, the treatment. And I think that's what the language of healing is really about, the opportunity to support women that they get to fight this disease in their own way. But one thing we, you know, really do encourage is reaching out to women who are there now or who have been there. The power of peer support is just so important in your own recovery and healing process.
You know, I think we don't ever want to minimize anyone's journey, and I think that's so vitally important. It might be in history the way that media, the way that other people or the people around us have looked at it has shifted. However, the personal experience and the personal journey that you've had and others has maybe changed and morphed a little bit over the decades, but it really is still the same path. And there's no way to get to the other end other than to have to go through it. So I think when people say, you know, I really find a very big disdain to people. They say, oh, we did it. This is how we did it. It's no big deal. I really find a big disdain with that, because I really find that that's just so minimizing someone's life challenge. And how they got there, how they're going through it, it's just not it just isn't for me, and I know it would not be for you or others. And I think that that's a vital importance that we need to stress on this show. Just because maybe you went through it, and you know, hey, it only took 6 months out of your life, and you're good to go, and you expect everybody else to have that same path and do the same therapies and do the same treatments, and it's almost like I call it a how dare you moment. You know, it's almost like not even giving the validity to the person themselves. Don't you think?
Yes, I really appreciate that take on it, because from the moment of diagnosis, I think one thing, even though breast cancer, of the many cancers out there, is, again, getting research dollars support, but still the cancer label is a tough one. And especially if you've been healthy, I had never been sick. I did not have breast cancer in my family history. And it was a total shock to me, a total shock. And suddenly you're labeled with this. And I think those of us who've been diagnosed, we often find that even those closest to us, cancer still is a scary word, and they don't quite know how to react. And yet, there's this great urgency. The people who love you the most really are like, okay, let's take care of it. Make decisions. What are we going to do? Listen to the doctor. And that's one of the things I would really want to share with any woman at the beginning of this journey, to take a breath. You know, as you said earlier, pay attention. And it's hard, but pay attention, you know, to your own heart and your own gut, because you're being asked to make some big decisions in terms of treatment, surgery, and so forth. And there is time to get the information you need. And when I talk about peer support, I do want to mention that in my background, I come from a publishing and communications background, and I think one of the most profound experiences and opportunities I had was to work with the Hazelden Foundation's publishing area. The Hazelden Foundation is an internationally known addiction treatment center in Minnesota. And, of course, among those recovering from alcoholism and addiction, support groups, peer support groups, have been very powerful in the healing process. But it has to be a safe group, one that's facilitated well, and one where the value is, I'm going to tell you my story. This is about me, and if you hear something that might help you, great, but I'm not going to tell you what to do. I'm not going to should you or would you or blame you or shame you. And I think is, even with all my background and knowledge and self-help publishing as I went through this, I was amazed at how even assertive women suddenly felt compromised by this, complex disease and the complex choices we had to make. When I did finally speak to other women, and I happen to have, I am lucky to have insurance, to be in Minnesota. We have, most of the breast cancer centers have good support groups that are offered to you. And I could talk to other women who'd been there, from the beginning about, what worked, what would you do differently. And I hear that again and again, is to take time for yourself. Your people who love you most just want you to hurry up and get the cancer out and get well. But, whatever choice you make, there's no right or wrong choices, but they need to be your choice. Whether it's mastectomy, lumpectomy, no surgery, trying alternative therapies first. There are so many options now and so many more targeted treatments. Breast cancer is not one monolithic thing, and that's the good news. But, of course, you don't know any of this until you're thrown into, the oncologist's office.
Right.
And suddenly you feel like you're getting, a crash seminar in oncology.
Well, so many people want to turn around and say, you don't just stick your toe into this and dabble in it. Once you get that diagnosis, you're almost pushed into the room and the door's shut. And I really think that that's so vitally important to pay attention to, because, you know, it's not just something that you get a little bit of or a lot of or whatever. And there's always an exit path. There's not always an exit path, don't you think?
Right. And, you know, and I'm not rejecting Western medicine in totality. I made my choices, but based on getting the information I needed and what I needed to understand, my type of breast cancer, what the various options were. And I was lucky in that I had a wonderful oncologist from the beginning who was very honest with me and said, you know, there are no guarantees. These are your choices.
Right.
I can tell you, you know, you have the highest grade tumor. I can tell you it's aggressive. I can tell you, you know, X, Y, Z, and here are a range of options. And she gave me information that I then could go do further research, get a second opinion, check out. But it's so easy to want to just, you know, my initial reaction was just tell me what to do, you know, make it go away.
Mm-hmm.
But really, I think unless you can find that space, and it really, you have to draw on all those inner resources that you have, you know, be it your spiritual beliefs, your psychological strengths, you know, your network of friends, your people support. You really do need to draw on those from the very beginning and not feel rushed.
And also to be able to say that it's not about their decisions, that you really need to be able to say that this is your book you're writing now and you need to pay attention. It's almost like you end up with an empty journal and now it's time for you to create that. And to not feel that you have to be on someone else's path. And how can you really make those choices? I mean, when you've got loved ones or family members and they're saying, but she did it, look at her, or she did it, look at her, or she didn't do what she was supposed to, look at her. And that finger pointing will just drive you up a tree. You know, it's just not the place that you want to be in. You want to say, I have to make my choices. And also, too, I think it's very important to note here, is that some people choose not to do some therapies or treatments, and you have to feel okay with it and understand that that is exactly for them. We are not all meant to come into this world and follow all these rules, but of course, you know, history has always told us that that's what we have to do, and I think now that's changing. It's now saying you make your own rules or you make your own path, and let's see where you go. It takes you.
I think, you know, I so agree with that. The big lesson for me, because I do, you know, I personally, my temperament is I'm very self-directed. I love learning new information. I want to make good decisions. I'm planful. But what I came to see that on both sides, the medical side, there's so much we're just learning about genetics. They don't have a lot of answers. They have options, but they're not answers and they're not guarantees. Just as in life, the choices we make in the other dimensions of our life, we continue to live with those and question those and wonder if we did the right thing and search out new paths. And I really tried to apply that to my cancer journey. And as you say, it's so important. I, for example, did not do radiation.
Mm-hmm.
My cancer was on the left side. It was in a place that my heart would have been very affected. And
right.
The chemo drugs I already had, I knew the most dire side effect was heart-related. And so you're always making these choices. Oh, I might address the breast cancer, but I might have heart failure at 60. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So they're tough choices, but I...
Right.
And if my... you know, no one should be blamed if there's a cancer recurrence or a metastatic issue because you rejected one treatment and chose another. There's no right or wrong answers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it brought me back around to, you know, there's an old blues song that I love that says, people accuse me of living day to day, but who are they kidding? So are they. And
right.
We each are really living day to day. And cancer really made me, you know, walk that talk. And so living this day in this moment, and what was the quality going to be, and what was the focus going to be, and letting go of things that weren't working or didn't feel energizing or supportive, that was a surprise in this journey, because you will find people you thought maybe would be there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it did become a power struggle with some of the choices I made. And as I talked to other women in doing the language of healing, you know, I hesitated to go back and revisit my own journey, but it was just a healing process to listen to the diverse choices other women made, but how they came out. None were sorry, I can say, for making a choice that felt right for them. You know, in the end, you know, it, in some ways, they felt stronger and more themselves at the end of this than they had through any other experience. But I guess facing mortality, you know, we're great, the human species, at living in denial, you know, that there's mm-hmm. an end to this. And because we can't. I don't want anybody to look at cancer as a death sentence like my father did.
Mm-hmm.
But it is an opportunity to go, whoa, you know, and to say,
right.
Yeah, I've come this far, and what do I want the rest of my life to look at, however long it is? And that's when it can be an empowering experience, and you can really, I think, then begin to share the laughs again and find your sense of humor and the joy. And I especially feel for some of the women I got closest to in this journey. One was 27 and one was 84.
Mm-hmm.
And think about, you know, dealing with your life and health and the choices you make. If you're 27 and have two little children, or you're 84 and kind of looking back and have lost a lot of your friends. But
right.
The wisdom I gained from, you know, sharing our choices and watching how each of us moved through this journey was amazing. And we were just there to, again, that's the peer support. Women going through it will appreciate how tough the choice you made and will often support you in that. When your family or friends or colleagues at work, your church, wherever in the community, there's a little distancing. You know, they can't quite
mm-hmm.
grasp it. And that's why I came to love, I used to think it was jargon, but I came to love the term new normal, because
right.
you really feel they all want you to get back to normal.
Uh-huh.
But it's really for you who go through it going forward to a new normal. And things happen to us that you can't always have the expectation that others are really going to grasp or share with you, you know, at that inner
mm-hmm.
level. And all you can do is, I think, live your life and go on with it, and in turn not judge or blame those who aren't understanding the journey you're making.
And I think also, too, we put so much emphasis on other people and other things. We make our choices, too, based on what other people need from us or what other people expect from us. And I think, really, that the breast cancer will take you to your knees if you keep riding on that pony, because that's just not where it's at. And you really need to be able to pay attention for you. If you choose, I mean, like, let's say there's some older people and they have a heart attack or whatever, and they opt to not have that heart bypass, you would think, oh, well, whatever, you know, that's their choice.
Right.
And you let it go. It's sort of like, well, whatever, it's no big deal, you know. Or we see people who have lung issues, and they just put on the oxygen, and they're not going to do the surgeries, or they're not going to do whatever. But when it comes to breast cancer, it's almost like it's this hidden thing that sort of like is seeping, and you really don't have these outward examples, you know, like with heart, you can't walk up a step, or a lung, you've got your oxygen strapped to you. It's almost like you're having this path and this road where it's so important for you to be able to have.
Right. And I think when you talk about The thing about breast cancer, too, is that it's both an intimate kind of cancer, but yet it's very visible, you know. And in our culture, of course, breasts
right.
are everywhere.
Yeah.
And then you get all the jokes about how, well, oh, great, you can get a great boob job and
right.
beyond, you know, just get on with your life. And you suddenly, you know, I think many women I talk to are balanced between that, oh, you know, trying to laugh about it. But
mm-hmm.
I think what you really appreciate once you lose a real breast and real tissue with real feeling, and the nipple is a very erogenous zone. It's a big
mm-hmm.
loss to lose that. And your sexual identity and your, you know, that takes a big hit too. And
right.
women, you know, put on a good face. But believe me, you know, the reconstruction is not, you know, a panacea for this. And reconstruction
mm-hmm.
after mastectomy is an entirely different thing than women with healthy breasts just making them larger with an implant. You know, and many
right.
reconstructions go on for years. And, you know, there's so many, I guess what I'm saying is when you talk about the expectations, you know, one of the
mm-hmm.
big expectations is, well, it's your boob, so get a boob
right.
job and get on with it.
Yeah, and it's just such a it's such a misnomer that it's a part of your body that you don't need. You know what I mean? Like
right.
it's heart, well, you've got to have it, or lungs, you have to have it. And it's sort of like, really? And, you know, there's so much dissing of the importance and the core sense of who you are is on every inch of our body. I mean,
right.
we have gotten, as humans, we've gotten very judgmental and very righteous in the way that we think about disease or any kind of thing that's going on with the human body, and we always have this box that you fit into. I mean,
right.
I can remember, and this is by no means in comparison, but it's just as in conversation. We can remember back in the 50s and 60s, people were called crazy. They would go to the nut house. They would,
exactly.
they were homely. They were ugly, fat, stupid. You know, that was very common, that dogma in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, you know?
Right.
And we've grown as humans to be able to lessen some of that or keep it in private or whatever you might want to call. But now we've just gotten onto the other dogma, you know. I lived in Scottsdale, Arizona for 10 years. Believe me, the land of the perfection, you know. And
yes.
it was very difficult, you know, that everything was perfection, and I just felt in my soul that I did not want to be in a land of perfection. And now I live in New Orleans where we believe in the imperfect, you know. We believe in uniqueness and righteous, you know, and you do for yourself. And, you know, it's nothing to walk down the street and see somebody wearing a tutu and, you know, and pink hair, and they turn around and it's
yeah.
a guy. Do you know what I mean? So in other
yeah.
words, we have this freedom, we have this expression that we're able to do. So that's a real example of the paradigm of life, I think. And to say, you know, when you get these diseases, it's, you know, where do you fit in there?
Exactly. I have to tell you, because, you know, one of the, I love what you say about New Orleans. It would be
mm-hmm.
a great place to be if you're walking around with a bald head and no eyebrows and eyelashes.
Right.
And everything.
I mean, we don't even notice it. It's something like it's so...
Right.
You just don't even notice. You don't notice the uniqueness here, which you would probably notice is if everybody looked the same, you know.
Right, and it's, you know, it's one of the big things in the healing process for me, and in talking with other women, it we call it show and tell. And when
mm-hmm.
we first really look in the mirror at ourselves, whether it was a lumpectomy or a mastectomy or hair loss, whatever it might be, and really getting to know your body again and feeling
yeah.
comfortable with it, accepting what's going on. And it's other, for me, it was other women who'd been through this process who showed me their reconstruction or their nipple tattoos or their scars or why,
mm-hmm.
talk to me about why they chose not to have reconstruction. And it really, the show and tell, it's almost... it has to happen with you first, but mm-hmm. other women who've been there are really helpful with it, because what happens, I mean, even the Cancer Society, you know, they have a catalog here. Here's wigs,
right.
and here's makeup. So nobody really has to know you're going through this. Just put on a wig
right.
and put on the makeup. And I know some of us who go on this journey kind of react to that, like, well, wait a minute, I never wore a lot of makeup to begin with, and now you really
mm-hmm.
have to be pretty artful to put on eyebrows.
Right, and I think what they're saying is that here's the box you need to fit into, and it's called humanity and society. And you're saying, really, you know, that's not really where I'm at.
Yeah, and it's a tough one, but, you know, as I said, I really was surprised, because I have a daughter, and raising her and wanted her not to feel the pressure of body image and
mm-hmm.
you know, the eating disorders that were rampant with young women and so forth. And I realize, unfortunately, that body image pressure is still out there, and it's just affecting younger girls at a younger and younger age.
Right.
But when I went through this, even I, you know, who I was 56, and I'm like, oh, I mean, I felt like a teenager again. This can't be happening. What about my identity, how much of who I was wrapped up in
right.
My sexual attractiveness still, you
mm-hmm.
know.
I think that's a common thing, you know, with the peer group and the media, and now we've got social media, which is even worse, you know.
Yes.
And we look at people, you know, in such a way that, if they seem appealing or appeasing to our inner senses, you know, that old theory that, you know, you've got 5 seconds and I can read you and then I'm on my way. Or do you have something that intrigues me that I would stay further? And I find that so so judgmental, and how dare we again. You know, we've had a few of those that I've said, and I find that in how dare you. You know, I mean, that is just not something that we should really be passing on to our children or other family members, is to be able to do that process.
But I love that you're doing, you know, 30 days or really looking at health, but the illness side too, because I really came to see, and I prided myself on being healthy and active and
mm-hmm.
enjoying, canoeing and hiking and so forth, but our society doesn't deal very well with illness, and so I found I wasn't well equipped. I think I had lost my mother and was dealing with an aging father, and I had gained in my 50s some life experience, some tools and so forth to better handle my cancer journey, and I had a great network of support, you know, both professionally and personally, and I felt lucky. But yet, I found that none of us, I mean, illness was still something that we wanted to be very temporary, you know, a task that we would make the plan and get over it and go on. And you said earlier, talk about, you know, the process. And, you know, it really is a process, because one of the things, once you're diagnosed with cancer, many women are living cancer-free, many women are living with metastatic disease, but there is no cure, no matter, I mean, and every oncologist will tell you that, and I see that that's a really difficult thing, and that it is tough to work in the field, because they can't clinically say there's a cure for any cancer. We know that it's you're cancer-free at the moment, or it's not active.
Mm-hmm.
But once you have a diagnosis, there's this shadow of recurrence. And some breast cancers, triple negative, for example, is known to recur very quickly in a couple years. Others, estrogen-positive cancer, is called the indolent cancer. It often doesn't recur for a decade.
Mm-hmm.
You learn all these little facts. So,
right.
As you say, you don't know. I mean, you don't know what a person's story is when you see them in the grocery store, in the street.
Mm-hmm.
For many of us, there's still this shadow, and it's another challenge. It's another process to learn, you know, to live again each day and not to live in fear, you know, but to live in this moment and to live really aware, as you say, paying attention to what is good, what's working, the people that give you energy. And I've talked to women that really never really said what was on their mind, or just especially,
yeah.
And of course I live in Minnesota, and Minnesota nice, and it's really hard to tell other people, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'd rather not hear that, or I don't agree with you even.
Mm-hmm.
And for some women it took the cancer journey, because you're just like, you know, I don't want to spend my time doing that anymore. I don't want to listen to that anymore.
And so many, I really find that when people come to me, they want something that's going to fix them, and they'll give me 6 months, you know, because that's what their doctor said. They have 6 months to live. You need to fix me. Here's a check. How much do I write it out for? And where do we start? And it's like, really, you know, and really it's not about the fixing. It's not about what we do or don't do. It's not about making you right or wrong. It's really about finding out what got you here. And so many times when I work with patients through my advocate work or any of the other groups that I do, we're talking about what got you here. It could be breast cancer. It could be lung cancer. It could be a mental condition of some sort with some label or some tag. It could be domestic violence. It could be anything. It could be what got
addiction.
You here.
Right.
You know? And when you say about other women talking, I think the biggest thing that when you go to the doctor all these years and all these decades, you know, you're going to tell the doctor exactly what he wants to hear. Of course. But then what you really have to realize is that which you are holding back is exactly what would set you free. You know, what has really gotten you here, you know, and it's so vitally important. I think, you know, if women, when they go to the doctor and then they walk out the door and they have a little book that says, I encourage this all the time, I want you to write down the first thing that comes to your mind, what did you not say? And then close it up.
Oh, that's what I was trying to say at the beginning with take the time. Don't, you know, an oncologist is a specialist. A radiologist is a specialist. They know their medicine, but they don't know you.
Correct.
And as much as we try to be holistic with, and many Western doctors are improving that holistic
mm-hmm.
approach, but the responsibility is still with us. I'm in a wonderful state, some of the best medical care in the country, Mayo, all of that, and
mm-hmm.
even Mayo has what they now call the patient-centered model, and they at least try to have every doctor look at everything, you know, on the chart,
uh-huh.
but the responsibility is still with us.
But again, too, what you just said is they look at the chart. They're not looking into your heart and your soul.
Exactly.
And isn't that what's the important thing here? I mean, no matter what kind of conversation we're having about health, we always come back to the core thing, and I always drive people back to this. It's all about your soul and your spirit. Your body is just a hanger for clothes, and it makes it something so that we all look alike, so that we will be able to interact together, period. If you can get to that point, then you can say, okay, now what is my inner self saying, you know? And
that's
so many times, it's important.
Important message for women with breast cancer, because as I talked with women for
mm-hmm.
the book, when they looked back, and I guess why I emphasized it at the beginning, they said, you know, I didn't like my doctor, but I didn't know what to do.
Right, right.
And didn't even feel they could say, you know, this relationship doesn't feel mutually respectful. I'm going to find another doctor. And it really broke my heart through that, because I do know I was lucky, as I said. I have a wonderful oncologist who's now at MD Anderson, and she's a specialist mm-hmm. in breast cancer research. She went back to what she really wanted to do. But not everybody's going to walk into that. And I heard more stories of how intimidated. And so they just said, okay, I'm going to have the mastectomy. And they were in the hospital in 4 days from diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. And that's where I really focus on helping people. And this is a really good message that you're sharing in your book, but I also do too, is what I say is we have to learn compassion. We have to learn to be able to wake ourselves up. But we absolutely have to learn about our inner strength. I mean, so many times, you know, I say to the people, that minute somebody says something to you as a diagnosis, make sure you are calling me. Because we will say, okay, this is what you have to ask your doctor. This is maybe what you might want to focus on. Did you take care of this legal stuff? Did you pay attention to your food and your diet? Maybe these right. supplements will help you not get sick. Maybe these other things will be able to give you some food source when you're not able to eat. Maybe this is where your spouse needs to look, and maybe you just need to tell that other person to go to the curb, you know?
That's
and
right.
it's giving you a sense of empowerment, and I think your book does that too, is it gives you a great sense of empowerment that you may not feel you've had before. So it gives you a right to start standing up for yourself.
And thank you for saying that. And we, as you said, it's short. You know, we start with
right.
a quotation to kind of focus on the topic, and I think a number of the quotations speak to how hard it is for us to just be kind
right.
to ourselves, to
yep.
pay attention to ourselves. As you said, we're so busy with the externals,
mm-hmm.
or what are the outer expectations, and paying, you know, just learning to be kind and take time with ourselves. And again, as you're in that place, we don't want you to isolate, but to be able
yeah.
to reach out. I want to reaffirm again that there are women out there who've been through this or on this road and want to help in a trusted, confidential, you know, no judgmental way. And I hope
correct.
People can find doctors and advocates like you, too. But what you say, I remember going through chemo, then the anti-nausea medicine, you know, is full of
yes.
steroids, so you go home,
mm-hmm.
you're exhausted, but you cannot sleep. And I felt
right.
myself just getting weaker and weaker instead of, you know, you can't not sleep. And that's when many of us pursued, you know, the aromatherapies, massage, other. And
right.
there are some alternative therapy programs now that are offered free through some better hospitals and clinics. But we are still, of course, doing battle with insurance companies to cover
mm-hmm.
what we see as things that were helpful to us and that we pass on to other women. But we do have a number of programs in Minnesota. One is called Pathways and one is called Well Within, who really help you deal, as you say, with the whole mind, body, spirit aspects of illness, and who do have breast cancer groups now. But they can be expensive, and not everyone can afford to add on to their co-pays, you know, these
right.
alternative programs. So I really hope, and I mean, doing the book affirmed for me my ongoing, in my own community and with my own oncologist and nurse navigators I know, who are all really supportive of a more holistic approach. And are
and
speaking
I think,
up more and speaking out more.
Yeah.
But we're not there yet.
Well, I think so, too. You know, I do a year-long program about how you can get from, you know, dust in front of the wall, as I call it. You know, you smashed into the wall, and now you've got to put yourself back together. And, you know, how can you, at the end of the year, see it forward? Because, you know what, it's not something that's instant. No matter what is going on in your life, it could be divorce, it could be cancer, it could be loss of your mother, it could be abuse, it could be anything. It doesn't matter. Loss of your house, it does not matter. It's all the same. It's a hit to you, and you're able to say, okay, now what do I do? So what we really talk about is about, okay, here's what the steps are going to be. I mean, January, the focus for January is I want you to write down every time you drink a glass of water. Do you know how many people don't even do something as simple as that? You know,
right.
and then by the end of December, we get you, okay, so now here's your medical book. Make sure you have 3 copies of it. You always put one on top of the refrigerator because when an ambulance comes to your house, That's the first place they're going to look. Ambulances always go out through the kitchen. Everybody over the age of 2 should have a medical book or information, or your family members. You know how everybody in the olden days used to have everything with magnets on the refrigerators? That's where ambulances went to be able to know something about you. What is your name? Oh, she has kids. Oh, see this? We need to find the husband, or whatever it is. They grab up all that stuff to be able to find out who people are anymore. And so it's so very, very important to have that stuff. So we teach this all along. I think there's one really big thing I want to drive home, and is that I really wish people would start getting some T-shirts that say, "It's not my frigging fault." How many times do we have people say, you know, let's say parents with kids with autism, "It's not my frigging fault. I did everything I could do. I did the best I could, and now this is where we are, so I can figure it out." Same thing with cancer. "It is not my fault. I didn't drink 2,000 bottles of BPA plastic last week, and this is where I ended up." You know, I think it's getting to be so tiring when people are just doing this finger pointing. You want to have this shirt on that says, "It's not my frigging fault." You know, and it's not, because you have to realize you may have dabbled and maybe been in those places, but you can't say, "It's not my 100% fault. It just happened." People, get over it, you know?
That is so important. And, you know, as I talk with women, you know, who have had breast cancer and are fighting it now, it's funny how we talk about how our radar is so much better. But when people present you with something as if they now have the truth to light in the way, instead of presenting it as, "This might help you, you might want to explore this," you really feel the difference, and you know that there's this sense of, as I call it, the blame and shame coming because you did this or you didn't do that. And it's so debilitating. And, you know, and people do mean well, but, you know, as you say, the social media age has complicated everything, because 24/7 we get so much unfiltered and brokered information that just goes viral. And for women with breast cancer, they start, it's amazing what they'll come to group with and talk about what they've heard.
And if you could just kick that crap to the curb and say, you know what, you just, hey, you know, get everybody get T-shirts that says this, and then say, okay, it's not my fault, so, but now what am I going to do about it? That's the next step, you know?
And, maybe that's
up
why
to them.
Illness feels like such a badge of shame. Like, instead of the, you know, the scarlet letter A, it's like I had the scarlet letter C, you know, on my chest.
And people even with heart disease, "Oh, well, you must have been eating too many fried foods." Or lung cancer, "Well, you definitely were smoking. You just don't want to tell us." And it's sort of like, oh, my gosh, you know. Those are the ones you want to run from screaming, you know.
I think it's about recognizing, you know, the limits to what is known, you know, as I say, but staying open to the possibilities of what we can do for ourselves. And we do. It is a responsibility to know ourselves. But again, I also see the denial. I see for many women, as you say, that they walk in the doctor's office and that door shuts and there's no exit. And they go through it and they never question themselves. They never question the doctor. And those were probably some of the saddest stories I heard, as far as, and that I couldn't include, because I think some of the stories in the book, that, you know, they needed healing on a different level at this point. There was such sadness and such depression about feeling they had done it wrong. And all I could do was say again, there's no right or wrong. We all do the best we can.
Right.
But, you know,
it's absolutely the most wonderful place, and you can take that however people want to. I say the most wonderful place was when someone is in that total desperation and they totally say, "You know what, I just don't know anymore." Because you know why? That's a place where your heart is actually saying, "I don't know, and it'll be okay."
And that's when real healing comes about. Healing is not, as I've said on so many shows and on my website, healing and wellness is not that today I have cancer and tomorrow I'm going to be cancer-free. Healing is that I'm accepting who I am. I can stand up and I can breathe in this moment, and don't you know, my heart is still working. That's healing. And I feel okay where I am. You could be healing, you know, doing chemo just because you're sitting here saying, you know, I'm okay. You know, my eyes are open and this is just whatever it is for the moment, and that's what it is. That can be healing. Healing
is
not.
Thank you for saying that.
The healing is not disease-free, and I'm going to walk down the street and proclaim it like a guru, you know?
Right, and I think that's why healing, as I say, I much more walk my walk now instead of just talking it, but, you know, healing became far more important to me than cure. I mean, this wasn't about, there isn't a cure, there isn't a guarantee, but I came to understand that there's healing. There's great healing in many dimensions. And, you know, I knew and loved the Buddhist description of the beginner's mind. There are many possibilities. In the expert's mind, there are few.
Right.
And I think I finally came to understand the beginner's mind and that it was okay, you know, not to have certainty. And, you know, learning to live with uncertainty, whether it was in a relationship, you know, a health status, whatever, all I could do was really be aware, pay attention to myself, my needs, like myself, love myself enough, and only then was I going to be able to reconnect, feel whole again, you know, whether it was, you know, emotionally, sexually, as a parent, you know, as a professional, and not feel somehow like damaged goods, because cancer can leave you feeling like damaged goods.
Right. Then that's also if you believe in the paradigm that the world is perfect, everything gets a cure, and you're right back to square one. You know,
right.
I think we really have to shift that paradigm. There is no cure for anything in the world. Are you curing a cold? Nope. Because do you ever have people say, my gosh, I had a cold last week and I've got another cold this week? Well, some residue in your body just decided that you were going to get it or it was out there, whatever you want to call it. So are we really curing everything? We're not really curing everything. I think we're just changing it and morphing it into something else, you know? And to be able to be free of all these labels is really what the whole goal in this whole world is right now, is let's start kicking the, you know, to the curb, you know? I mean, great, I have a health issue, you know? It's a real big one, you know? And that's where I am, and that's it. And rally your support people that really do care and that it's important to them also.
You're right, and you know, and it has to be able to be integrated into the life tapestry here and into everyday living and not compartmentalized and then, you know, stuck away in the attic. You're so right. I mean, there just doesn't seem to be a place at least to deal very openly and wholeheartedly with illness or your health issues in a way that is supportive and empowering. And
well, Pat, they can all join. We'll be having this wellness thing starting in January, and I'll put out more information on that. Well, Pat, can you give us some more information about, do you have a website or a way people could find out more information about you and about your book? That would be great.
Well, I'd like to share my publisher's website. They have a great website that the publisher is Canary Press, and that's C-O-N-A-R-I. But the company is www.redwheelwiser.com, and Wiser is W-E-I-S-E-R. And their focus is on health and self-help and personal and spiritual growth. And there are a number of resources that I think really seem to align with what you are talking about and your approach to healing. And I would like to share my email, if that's okay.
Sure, that's
because
perfect.
Because I continue to love to hear, and I keep them all confidential, stories and connect with, especially especially other women who may be struggling with this and may not want to join a group, but, you know, have a one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
And that is pbpjbenson, B as in boy, E-N-S-O-N, @gmail.com.
Absolutely. You know, I think it's so important to be able to have somebody that would relate that you can reach out to. So many times, you know, you get in these groups and you walk in and you say, oh my gosh, you just could feel the energy in here and there's a whole lot of finger pointing and I'm just not ready for that. I just need someone to sit with me and let my heart pour out and that's all I need. And is there anyone out there?
And right. And I think one of the things we're working on here is how to create a mentor program, especially for younger women who are much more comfortable with the online and the social media, so there can be one-on-one. Because you're right, that's the downside to groups. Not every group is well-facilitated or a safe group, and you do need to have an experienced facilitator.
You know, sometimes you get so sick of listening to other people's stories, you just need someone to listen to yours, and I think that's what's so important. You know, and you need to keep saying your story until you're tired of hearing your story, and that's the most important thing, too. Because you know what? Really, there's a whole lot in there. If you have to say it 100 times or 1,000 times, it needs to be that. And that's and then, no one should ever have a marker and say, okay, you're done, it's time's up, and it's like, no, I'm going to keep doing it, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's up to you to decide when you're ready to walk away and go on. And others who remain in the group more or less to be supportive to the newcomers, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to have a range of experience, and there's often hope when they can see somebody who's been there, survived 5 years, 10 years, you know, whatever it is. So
absolutely.
So
well,
we often don't even speak, as you say. We let the silence and just our survival speak for itself.
Well, Pat, thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show today.
Oh, thank you so much. I look forward to listening in January.
Very good. Thank you so much. If you'd like some more information about Pat Benson, the book is The Language of Healing, Daily Comfort for Women Living with Breast Cancer. I would really encourage you to check out this book because it's a great gift item. You could give it to almost anyone. It's non-judgmental. It's just saying I'm here and maybe sometimes I'm not listening or maybe sometimes I'm not paying attention and maybe this book will help just be able to open that door and say, I understand that you're going through this and maybe that is all I can do. Maybe that's all you need. Maybe that is just what that moment needs. So please do check out her book. The link is on the bottom of today's show page, and you'll be able to just find out right there the name of the book and where you can purchase it, and that would be wonderful. And please do share it with others. So thank you so much for joining us today on Alternative Medicine and Wellness. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. It's been a pleasure having you with us today on Sedona Talk Radio and Blog Talk Radio and iTunes. We are also archived. If you need more information about myself, please do just check out my show page on the radio. And I do, as we've said, is beginning January to January of next year, 2015. We will be having a wellness group, and what wellness means to me is we're going to go into that deep, dark corner of yourself and start bringing that forward, and all of this other stuff is just going to go to the curb. We'll be taking out a whole lot of garbage for a year and start finding out who we really are, why it's so vitally important, and how we can nourish that day to day. We're also going to be having a compassionate group. If somebody just needs to sit there and tell their story, we are all ears, and there will be no judgment, and that's so vitally important. And also, on the other page, mypersonaladvocate2.com, we will also be talking about the Advocate Program. And what that means is, when you are faced with a diagnosis or a health condition, what do you do now? The answer is call up, go to the website, become a member, and you will start helping you do that. What do you ask your doctor? What do you not ask your doctor? Oh, my gosh, I don't know what to do. Oh, my husband decided to leave today. Oh, my kids, they're just still screaming, and I can't listen to them anymore. And what constitutes your medical health chart? So thank you so much for joining us. There are a lot of assets here. You'll be able to find out more information. And please do email Pat if you have any questions on breast cancer. She'll be more than happy to talk to you. So thank you so much for being with us. And until tomorrow, have a great day.
Bye-bye.
thank you so much for joining us today here on Alternative Medicine and Wellness. It has been a pleasure to be with you, and we hope you found more information that will be able to make your life just a little bit easier. You know, it's not an easy trip all the time in this life, and sometimes we say, you know, if I could just maybe hear it from somebody else, or maybe hear that someone else's story might be similar to mine, or maybe just gain a few extra tips to make my journey a little bit easier. Please join us on Health Blast Radio every day for the year 2015, where we will be having so many different practitioners, all kinds of authors, just regular people like you and I, having a casual conversation about a different topic almost every day. Check out our website for more information on the Women Over Age 50 group. It is drjeanettegallagher.com. You can always just Google my name, Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and you will find out so much more information about upcoming radio shows, about other websites I have, other programs we are currently doing. And if you just need help, please pick any of the websites, any of the links, and send me a private message. Thank you so much for joining us today on Health Blast Radio. It's been an absolute pleasure, and please, just in the morning, before you reach for that cell phone, or the television remote, or even your glasses, open your eyes and say, thank you, God, for another day. It's been a pleasure. And have a great day.